Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 290, recorded Monday, March 20th, 2017. The Imagination Gap. Triangulation is brought to you by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/triangulation. And by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with the best, the brilliant, the best minds in technology, the people who are thinking big thoughts, and we try to get their big thoughts into an hour. It's always a lot of fun. I'm glad you're here for today's Triangulation. Our guest is a return visit from Brian Reich. Brian is an author. He's written a number of books, including Media Rules. We talked to him when Shift and Reset came out. And his latest is called The Imagination Gap. It's about, well, the lack of imagination. One wouldn't think there's a lack of imagination, but apparently there is in this world. Stop thinking the way you should and start making extraordinary leaps of imagination. Brian, welcome back to Triangulation. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Media Rules was about media and connecting with your audience, the new media, something that we kind of feel like we do a little bit here. Shift and Reset was about kind of how nonprofits can address today's crisis issues. How does the imagination gap follow onto that? You have a wide-ranging set of interests.
I try. Thank you. So the evolution went from, you know, technology is changing the way we get and share information to the ways that we apply what we now have available to us in terms of access to information, access to each other, access to incredible technologies, et cetera, was not getting enough done.
Mm.
And the imagination gap came because I, you know, was struggling with all of these different things I was working on and people who I was talking to. And, you know, why weren't we able to move past just the next little improvement on the way we're doing things, right? What was the trouble that people were having thinking about eradicating a disease or completely transforming the way we, you know, get from one place to another? And what I realized is that people struggle to do things that they have never done before. And the tool set inside of all of us, inside our brains, that allow us to go places we've never been and to conceive of things that we never thought were possible is our imagination. And somewhere along the way, the imagination and the power of that imagination that we all have has been sort of squashed and diminished. It's still in there, but we're not using our imagination to its fullest extent. And as long as we or when we are not using our imagination to its fullest extent, you know, we're really missing out on, you know, massive, massive opportunities across every sector, right? We're never going to open up new fronts in you know, business or science. We're not going to really maximize the potential that we have as human beings. You know, all this talk about AI and stuff. We're never going to get really where we can or where we should if we don't get off this kind of constant innovation track and really start to use our imagination in big ways. So that's the gap, is this inability that we seem to have now, you know, almost to a person in the world today, to really think big and to go beyond the place where anyone thought this stuff was possible.
So you're saying we're confusing innovation with imagination.
Not only that, but I think we've reached a point of essentially innovation fatigue.
That's obvious. I mean, you look at our smartphones, which was a real source of innovation for a decade, and now it's just take away the headphone jack around the corners. It's very minor stuff.
Well, right, and that's the thing, is innovation is important, right? These constant incremental improvements, right? We should be getting faster. We should be getting smarter, and power should last longer. We should not have to, kind of operate in the same ways that we always have. But there's a big difference between sort of that next little conceptual leap, that logical extension of what we already are experiencing, and the idea of going to a place that we've never been, that we have no idea how it's going to turn out, and should not be afraid to go out and try to figure out whether that's going to Mars, which is a massively imaginative concept, but really was conceived of decades ago, and now we're starting to figure out and may actually be able to realize some of that. But we're not really thinking past, can we colonize the next planet, or can we make the trip from here to California, or I'm in New York, so from here to California, that much faster and that much more interesting. Where are those monumental leaps? They're in that dark, interesting part of our brain, and we just have to figure out how to get it out again.
I mean, clearly we've had imagination in the past. What happened?
Well, so imagination has really sort of come in waves, I think, when you look at history, particularly around the times when society has shifted from, agrarian to industrialization to the information age. And now we're opening up into this imagination age, this idea of artificial intelligence and things like that off into the future. But really what I think happened is, when you look at children, when you look at all of us when we're young, and I have a 9-year-old and an almost 7-year-old, they have these incredible imaginations, yeah. Right? They're often these worlds of their own creation, and they're having conversations with people that they've not only never met, but who are conglomerations of, all the experiences they've ever had. But then, they get into school and they grow up and they get into the workplace, and you're told that's not how it's done. That's not the way we've done it before. That's not going to help you pass the test. That's not what the client wants. Whatever the reason that people give, all that does is to sort of shut down the use of the imagination. So we all have it, and I would argue that in many cases we as individuals are using it. We get into the shower and we have this crazy idea for, how to solve the energy crisis in the world or whatever it is. But then as a society, as a workplace or as an educational institution or whatever, we're just shutting people down. We're telling them their imagination isn't valuable. And so we've stopped sharing those ideas, and we've stopped exploring those ideas and celebrating those ideas that go beyond our immediate experiences.
You say, in fact, that we're protectionist of the old idea, of the old great ideas. It's like we don't want new ideas.
Well, new ideas are scary, right? Things that you haven't done freak people out. And, the people who are most guilty of suppressing others' people's imagination are those who are in power, right? The people who have the most to lose by things dramatically changing. You'll see anyone in an industry supporting innovation, right? These little improvements that will make them more money, make them more efficient, open up some new fronts in case they run out of whatever resource they're using to build their stuff. But you rarely will see, the boss, the CEO, et cetera, talking about a world in which what they're currently doing no longer applies, no longer exists, no longer is needed, right? People are afraid to give up what they know because it means they give up their control and it gives up their power. But obviously, we're going to need that to open up all these new fronts that we haven't been able to open up before. There has to be more people who say, what if we could do this, or wouldn't it be interesting if things turned out entirely differently than we think, they would if we stayed on the current path. That will be game changing when we're back in a mode where we're able to do that more.
This is really interesting. We're talking to Brian Reich. His new book is The Imagination Gap, and you interview for the book a bunch of Imagineers, photographers, and entrepreneurs, actors, a Lego brick artist, Instagram stars, that kind of thing. We'll talk more about this and why creativity is not the same as imagination, which is now I'm challenged. I got to figure that out. Stop thinking the way you should. Start making extraordinary things happen. Let's be more imaginative. We'll have more in a minute, but our show first, before we do that, is brought to you by Betterment. Imagine, if you will, a better way to invest for your future, not putting it in a bank or, you know, an investment fund, but letting the automated investment service take charge. It's changing the industry by making investment easier and at a cost that's a fraction of what you'd pay for traditional financial services. And that's important because it's hard enough to make your money make money. But if you have to pay a part of that or a large chunk of that out to an investment service, you're not going to make as much money. Betterment really is amazing. We've seen tech transform commerce and entertainment and ride sharing and security, but it can also help you invest better. Betterment combines smart technology plus human advisors. And I really like this. There's still a human that you can talk to. So you're not just, you know, it's not a cold machine experience. You're going to get the optimal results no matter what level of investment, no matter what time frame. And Betterment has certified financial professionals, licensed financial experts who monitor your accounts, can answer questions. You'll get, you know, planning calls if you want them, notifications throughout the year. Betterment's goal-based investing framework and advice algorithm let you know if you're on the right track in seconds. In fact, you could do that right now by going to betterment.com/triangulation. You can sync your outside investments in as well, so you have a total picture of your net worth in one place. Smart deposits at Betterment, highly recommend those. You'll automatically invest excess cash, so your nest egg grows without any effort on your part. They have a complete retire guide, so you can take a look at your retirement, calculate your retirement gap, figure out how to solve that. And of course, because it's automated, they do the sophisticated stuff like tax loss harvesting that lowers investment taxes and increases after-tax returns. And never any trade, transaction, or rebalancing fees. There's also no minimum to sign up, which I love. Global diversification, smart rebalancing, lower fees mean you're going to do better than the typical DIY investor, a lot better. And, of course, end-to-end investing means fast cash transfers. Your tax forms are available at the earliest possible date. Secure investing, all the stuff you're going to look for. I want you to take a look at Betterment. As with everything in life, investing involves risk. But right now, you get 1 month managed free with your initial deposit of $10,000 or more. Visit betterment.com/triangulation. Betterment.com/triangulation. Betterment is investing made better. Give it a try today. We're talking imagination and the imagination gap with the author of a new book by that title. Brian Reich is here. He's been here before for his book, Shift and Reset. I'm sorry we didn't have you on for Media Matters. We should have. That would have been very timely with what we do. But I'm thrilled we can talk about this. You say imagination does not equal creativity. What's the difference?
Creativity is an expression. It's the output. So you have to conceive of these big, crazy, unformed ideas somewhere, you know, coming out of the dark parts of your brain. And then, right, you know, you have to bring it to life. And creativity is how you bring it to life. It's how you formulate it in a way that others might understand or similar. But a big part of this is, you know, and it relates to how I wrote the book, but we've seen around innovation and creativity, particularly over, say, the last 10 years, lots of people saying anyone can be creative, anyone can be innovative. Here are the 9 steps you need to follow. Here are the 3 things, and if you just do these things, you'll be creative. And there is some truth to that. But what we've seen, I think, over the last, say, decade is this effort to make how we explore creativity and how we pursue innovation uniform, that all you have to do is go through those 9 steps or those follow those 3 principles. And what makes imagination so unique and so powerful is that everyone has an unlimited imagination, and everyone's imagination is unique. It's shaped by their experiences. It's shaped by all of our interactions with everything that's going on in the world and with each other. So, you know, yes, you know, creativity is critical, and if you follow the 5 or 7 steps, you know, you too can share your story or produce an output that is more compelling than you might have been able to do before you did those things. But you still need that idea. You need that initial spark of imagination before that creativity and that expression of that creativity can come into play.
So it precedes creativity. Creativity is the act, is acting in effect upon your imagination.
Absolutely. And yeah. And it is important, right? Because I can have a ton of imaginative ideas, and if I never share them, obviously they won't become any sort of reality, which would be, you know, disappointing. But also, you know, my imagination will not then do anything to help feed anybody else's. So part of the value of expressing that idea, of bringing that creative execution to life, is that now others get to absorb that and do whatever their brain is going to do with it. So we need creativity, absolutely, just as we need innovation. We need to get faster and smarter. But we're nothing if we don't start with the big and the novel and the, you know, truly expansive imaginative concepts.
It's a little hard to grasp what imagination is, but you did, in the book you refer to one of the most powerful books I've ever read, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And here's an example of imagination. Here's a guy in the Nazi concentration camps. He can't, you know, in an environment and a situation just horrific. He has no freedom at all, but he realized he had the power to decide, you know, to determine his response, to decide how he's going to respond to what's happening. And he used his – he would imagine his family. He would imagine how much he loved his wife, who was also, by the way, in a concentration camp across the fence. And he says that you quote him in the book that's saying between – I really like this – between stimulus and response, between the thing that happens to us and how I respond, there is a space. I don't think people think of there being a space there. That space is where we decide what our response is going to be. We determine. And that's where imagination lies. That was very powerful when you described it that way.
Well, and you know, if nothing else, imagination is probably the most critical tool to human survival. Right?
Yes.
So
for him,
for all of us, go back to cave people. Right. Person after person would go out, leave the cave to see what was going on. Maybe they were hunting or whatever, and not return. Right. A dinosaur would eat them up, or whatever would happen. Right. And if we had just continued to do that, if we had just continued to walk out of that cave without conceiving of what could possibly be out there that we needed to be prepared for, we would have not been a species. You know, it's the same reason why we don't all need to burn our hand on the stove
right.
to understand that that is not a good thing for us to do. But we're not going to take someone's word for it on face, right? That the imagination is constantly churning out these things that allow us to look around the corner. And so, you know, certainly in the case of Frankl and the concentration camps, right, he was pressed into a situation where his, you know, it was very obvious that his survival depended on his ability to imagine and conceive of this world that was very different than the one that he was experiencing. But it also happens, you know, subtly, constantly. You know, you don't have to pick up every signal because your brain is teaching you and your body, you know, that there are things out there that you don't need to interact with at all. And so our basic functions are enhanced by imagination. You know, it's critical to survival.
There's a reason that we think of things that go bump in the night, and that's helpful.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Good thing. Well, what happens then? I mean, we're born with it. As you point out, kids are very imaginative. What happens?
Well, you know, we have a lot of structures in society, whether it's education or work, that are not, you know, created to encourage imagination. We are encouraged to learn things, to know things with certainty, to be able to prove them, to be able to recall them, right? Part of the idea of imagination is that you are taking all that knowledge, all those ingredients, and you're fashioning something entirely new and different, something that had not been conceived of before. So as we train ourselves and reward people for their ability to recall information, you know, it becomes less and less a sort of present force coming out of our brain to use our imagination. That's one. And then the other, and I think it's much more I hope it's unintentional, right? But it is insidious nonetheless, is we constantly tell people that their ideas are no good. Frankly, with my kids, right, it's all I can do to hold myself back when my daughter says, well, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if we did this? Or my son says, couldn't it turn out like that? You know, and my instinct is to go, you know, kids, that's not the way the world works.
Yeah.
Right? That's not how it works. But all that you do when you do that is you teach them not to think that way, that big ideas and crazy anything is possible stuff has no value. It has extraordinary value, right? In fact, it is so valuable that it is beyond what we have been able, you know, to measure or calculate to date. And we need those things, right? You know, at some point, someone set out on a boat and said, there's got to be, you know, land somewhere there. The earth's not flat. That's imagination, right? At some point, someone said, you know, what if we, you know, cut open people's bodies? Maybe we could save them and we could eliminate disease or, you know, or fix the things that get broken, right? That requires imagination. And then, yes, experimentation and trial and error and innovation and all these things that follow suit. But, you know, at every point in human existence, someone has used their imagination to go to a place that nobody realized could be there. And then, you know, everything else is sort of, you know, trickle down from there in a really powerful way.
You talk to and talk about a lot of people who have recovered their imagination, the people we actually most often honor as creators, started by recovering their ability to imagine. How you have prescriptions in each chapter for little assignments of things to do. How can we recover our ability to imagine now that it's been beaten out of us?
So I think there's a two-part sort of responsibility we all have. One is that imagination, because it is in there and maybe just dormant a little bit, can be resurfaced simply by sort of committing yourself to doing it, right? So one of the things that triggers imagination is the breaking of patterns. So I live in New York City where, you know, there's constant noise and, you know, just people moving around and all of that. When I, you know, go on a trip and I'm find myself in some place that isn't as busy and loud as the city, right? My brain explodes, right? My imagination goes crazy. And you have to consciously put yourself in these situations that break the habits and the patterns that you get into, right? You can't will yourself and say, I'm going to be imaginative today. Like I'm going to come up with great ideas, right? That doesn't necessarily get you there. You need to, you know, put yourself in these environments where all the other distractions and all the other requirements strip away. So one of the examples in the book, which is a little bit like forcing yourself, but not exactly, is what I call the 100 ideas test, right? So if I said, you know, let's get together and we need a whole bunch of new product ideas, or we need a whole bunch of new ideas for how to, you know, to cure cancer or whatever it is, you know, we'd get a bunch of good ideas, but, you know, maybe the first 25 or 30 would be kind of things we already had thought of, or maybe slight iterations, slight improvements. If I said, you know, I need 100 ideas, I need at least 100 ideas, as you push past that initial sense of that brainstorm, it's going to get hard. You're going to come up with what you consider to be terrible ideas or ideas that aren't new at all. And then at some point, right, you're going to push through that barrier. You're going to push through that fear that that's something that's already been done or that won't be received well by the boss or whatever it is. And once that happens, right, and you're sort of unlocked, amazing, you know, new, different, radical, crazy, imaginative ideas are going to come out. The other side of that, the answer is we have to stop shutting other people down. You know, we have to stop saying that's not how we've done it before. We have to stop saying that's a bad idea. How do you know something that doesn't exist is a bad idea? The only reason someone would say that is because they aren't using their imagination. So lots of people call, you know, Elon Musk and the nerds at NASA, you know, crazy and dangerous, right, for trying to go to Mars, right? Well, how do you know? For all we know, waiting on Mars, you know, is the cure for cancer and, you know, the answer to, you know, all of our divine questions. Who knows what's out there? I'd rather take a shot and explore it and see what happens than then wonder, what happens beyond what we already know we can do.
At the same time, I feel so guilty because I have shut my kids down. A lot of what we do on these shows, our shows, is poo-poo these crazy ideas that these entrepreneurs come up with. So I feel like it's just almost a natural mechanism of society to say, no, shut up. That's crazy. So you're fighting upstream. And the irony is companies that started with great imagination and, as a result, innovation, almost instantly structure themselves to shut further creativity and imagination down.
Yeah. I mentioned Elon Musk, and actually Musk is very interesting. When I interviewed, not just the 30 or 40 people in the book, but talked to people generally about imagination, and I asked, who do you think has a big imagination? The one person in sort of business and technology life that came up over and over again was Elon Musk. What's really interesting about the way Elon Musk does things, and I don't know if it's conscious or not. I unfortunately have not met him yet, but sort of all these projects are separate, right? So he knows that if he tried to scale, his SpaceX stuff too far, right, that it inevitably is going to fall into needing to, repay investors or make certain money or, all the things that kind of quash the imagination. So when he spins off another crazy novel idea, he makes sure to keep it sufficiently separate from all the other things that he has done before so that each one has that space to continue to be imaginative, right? And eventually, the imagination is going to shift from just the idea stage to that implementation where the creativity and all these other things absolutely come in. But, beyond that, you can use imagination and need to use imagination kind of at every stage, at every step of what you're doing. You gotta protect that opportunity. And so Musk does that very well. Schools, the younger schools, right? When you're in kindergarten and first grade and second grade, they have playtime all the time, right? And you kind of think, why are my kids, constantly playing instead of sitting there, learning to read and doing math and, all of that. When in reality, it is through the imagination that our kids are learning, right? They're learning to problem solve and they're learning to come up with questions that expand what their brain has already been trained to do. If we sat there and taught them the alphabet and, taught them this is the way to play house or this is the way to play, capture the flag or whatever, we would be training the muscles of their brain to not take advantage of the imagination. So you have to do that. Now, to your point about shutting down, certain things, look, there is a difference between a crazy good idea and an idea that is practical or, reasonable, right? But there's absolutely a way to have your cake and eat it too, right? You don't have to tell people the idea is terrible to say, I'm not sure that in the current environment, right, that's going to sell, right? And if your job as a company is, in fact, to raise money or pay back investors or sell product, then, sometimes using your imagination will be a hindrance. But if you truly are in business, say, to cure cancer, then, none of those more practical limitations should be a factor in your thinking at all. It's, everything should move you that much closer to achieving your goal, realistic as it, or not as it may seem.
It is a weird paradox because I think we do love imagination, especially us geeks. We read so-called imaginative fiction, science fiction, all the time. And one of the things we love about it is, how outre and marvelous and miraculous it can be. And we think, when we're, in technology that we're surrounded by amazing creativity and innovation. But you don't have to look very far to realize, especially right now, it seems like, we are in an imagination gap, as you say.
Well, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
And this one really sort of upset me. So I was at South by Southwest last week, and
I should be the home of imagination, right?
Exactly. And I've gone for 16 straight years now, and I have seen it evolve and go off course and come back and but what makes South by incredible is you get the most ambitious people with the you know, biggest ideas and sort of the least amount of fear about going out there and just trying things.
Yeah.
So this year, cancer was a big topic. Joe Biden came and talked about the cancer moonshot that President Obama launched, et cetera. And I went to a session that I went actually because a friend of mine who's the head of Biden's moonshot was on the panel. But one of the other guys on the panel was considered to be essentially the most, you know, impressive, ambitious scientist, you know, with all the crazy gene trials that were going to make all the new frontiers of cancer fighting possible, right? And the moderator asked the panel, they said, you know, okay, what does the world look like when we have no cancer? And, you know, how do we know that we're on track? What is that moment? What is that kind of milestone that signals that we're on the way? And the guy who was supposed to be the biggest, most ambitious, most fearless of them all says, you know, I can't imagine a world without cancer. And I'm sitting there and, right, my sort of heart sank, right? Because if that guy can't imagine a world without cancer, how are the rest of us supposed to go along and commit our lives and commit all this energy, right? Biden is up there saying that we have the potential not just to cure any cancer, but all 200 plus varieties of cancer, right? That this is the greatest fight of our time, that we're more equipped now than we've ever been. And one of the guys on the front lines uses the phrase, I can't imagine this even being possible, right? If I'm sitting there in the back, let's say I was hypothetical, let's say I was a billionaire, right? And I'm looking for where to invest my billions. I'm looking for what I can do to change the world for the better, right? All of a sudden, cancer feels like the wrong investment to me, right? Cancer feels like maybe that's not, you know, where the most imaginative people are, and there have to be some other things that we can do that's better for society. So not only was that disappointing because I think we should cure cancer, and in my imagination, we absolutely can do that, but the trickle-down effect of somebody using their imagination and communicating that they have this massive you know, idea that goes beyond what we can sort of reasonably get to on our own has a huge effect on everyone else, right? That's what motivates everyone else to have an imagination and to try things and to be fearless. So if, you know, he happens to be a notable figure, but every time one of us pulls our punches when it comes to imagination, you know, we're potentially shutting down, you know, the avenue that's going to lead us to, I don't know, anything from flying cars to, you know, to, you know, completely new languages that you know, that are needed later in the future. And I don't even know when or why, but, you know, dream it up. It's out there.
It's not just the outside world that's shutting us down. It's ourselves. We shut ourselves down. We tell ourselves, no, that's too far-fetched. That can't happen. And that's not the way. So we're talking to Brian Rich. I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name earlier. Brian Rich. But it's spelled Reich if you're doing a search. And his new book is all about recreating your ability to imagine, the imagination gap. Stop thinking the way you should and start making extraordinary things happen. So I think we need some prescriptions for change. You say in the book that the key to recovering our imagination is acknowledging and understanding our imagination gaps, recognizing the difference. And I think we've talked a little bit between pursuing innovation and using your imagination, commitment to the care and feeding of your imagination, and applying it. Not once, but actively and consistently in everything we do. I want to know how to do that. I like that idea. Most of us had one good idea once, and we're just acting over and over and over on it. No new imagination. Let's make some imagination. I got something that's imaginative. This is actually really imaginative. Your first home robot. And the guys who work at Mayfield Robotics, I think, really use their imagination on this to create Curry. And here's why. I think the first thing probably people said to them is, well, what does it do? And they made a list of things Curry does, but they then made a list of things Curry doesn't do. And there's a reason for that. And people often overreach, I think, with robots. You know, they you know, it becomes a vacuum cleaner, a dishwasher, or a phone answer. Curry's just your little plastic pal that's fun to be with. Knee-high, kids love her. She, of course, has some intelligence. Really, she has some personality in there. She recognizes faces and voices. She'll greet you differently for everybody each time you come home. Curry does a few things. She'll play you songs to wake you up in the morning. She'll read the kids a bedtime story. She'll even follow you around as you listen to your favorite podcast. She's got great speakers in the base, two good stereo speakers. She also has four MEMS microphones, so she can really understand what you're saying, and she'll act upon what you're saying. First thing you'll do when you get Curry home is you put her on the charging base. She knows where that is, and then she maps out your house. She literally builds a map in her mind of your house, and you can name rooms. You say, this is Curry. Come with me. This is the living room. She doesn't talk. That's one of the things she doesn't do. She beeps. Because they thought talking's too constricting. Curry uses beeps and boops. This is why kids love it. That you kind of understand. You know that there's positive, that's negative, that's hello. And they're all unique and fun. And your imagination goes to work. So you go, Curry, this is the kitchen. This is the living room. You tell her the names. So now you could say, Curry, go to the living room. See if the dog's on the couch. Curry has a high-res camera. And she can send to your phone images. In fact, she'll investigate loud noises and send you images back to your phone. She could take photos or video on video too. Yep, on command. So, and you could say, follow me, Curry, and she'll follow you around as you're playing your favorite song or your podcast. I mean, I really think these guys have spent, and gals, have spent a lot of energy thinking about what your first robot should be. And they've come up with Curry. Curry is hardware complete now. They're still working on the software and doing some really interesting things. I went down there about a month ago, and Adam, who's working on the idle mode, showed me how Curry will join a conversation. You're three of you standing around, and this little robot comes up, and she looks at each person who's talking. She blinks. She's very human. It's kind of amazing. Now, they said, now don't sell the fact that this is hackable, but of course, it's all open source hardware and software, and we're going to make it possible for people to do additional things with Curry, of course. Curry will be $700 when she's available later this year, and you can get in line, and I would recommend this. I did immediately to get your Curry with a pre-order, refundable deposit of $100, and then the balance is due at shipping, plus taxes and shipping. So it'll be roughly $5.99 additional. Go to heycurry.com and find out more about Curry. H-E-Y-K-U-R-I. Heycurry.com. And this fall when we get our Curry, you will see. Because we're going to have Curry. Well, I think we might get one for the house, too. And one for the studio. It's hard to explain. But when you get to know Curry, it's like, this, they did it right. They figured it out. Lots of imagination here. And your kids, especially, because they have that imagination, will really interact with Curry. It'll really be, they'll look back at, they'll say, the year 2017, that was the year we got our first robot. Hey, Curry, HeyKurri.com. We're talking to Brian Rich. We've talked to him before about Shift and Reset. His previous book was Media Matters. His newest is The Imagination Gap, a prescription for reinvigorating your imagination. You had it as a kid, but then, as over time, people say, no, get real, get realistic, join the real world. In fact, it's funny that you go to South by Southwest every year. Do you feel like South by Southwest is a good place to go to recover your imagination?
I do, but you not surprisingly have to work a little bit at it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite examples, and it picks up on this idea of sort of machine learning and all of that, is this year South by started to make recommendations on sessions that you might want to attend. But they did it based on, like so many other algorithms in social media and things like that, they did it based on the things you had clicked on or attended or the people you had liked. Right. So if I liked a session on curing cancer, of course, it's going to recommend a bunch of other sessions that directly or maybe just subtly indirectly relate to curing cancer. The reason to go to South by Southwest is because you can access people and access experiences and things that you had no idea even existed. And sometimes they exist, but you have no idea what you're going to get out of it. So like you know, on my last day there, this time I went to see Frank Oz talk.
The puppeteer, the creator.
The puppeteer, the great one. He had a film. I didn't even know the film existed, and he's there. And he did Miss Piggy, and he did, Fozzie the Bear. And he brought his friend who was Gonzo. And, I've studied puppets, and I love the Muppets. And, they do extraordinary things on Sesame Street, et cetera. But even just him talking through how he – has to navigate a puppet when he only has two arms, so someone else is doing the other arm and all of this. Right now I'm thinking totally differently about, everything that I do with movement, or every time I see a robot, right? And so that kind of thing just opens up the imagination. It goes back to what I was saying before about this idea of breaking patterns, right? If I just stayed on the path that I am, if I just took the same commute to work, if I just watched the same TV shows or even the things that are recommended because they're similar, it's not going to spark the kind of big novel ideas that I know are possible with imagination. If I can make an effort to break out of that pattern, I have no idea what's going to happen, right? It could go badly. I could go out into the forest and I could run out of gas and I could have no power.
Right.
I could be cold and miserable, right? But it's absolutely going to change my perspective and my experience, and it's going to trigger my imagination in new and extraordinary ways. So, I can't move to the forest because that's just another kind of pattern, right? If I do that every day, but if you are just pushing a little bit each day to change things and not to be more efficient and not to be just following the recommendation engines that exist on everything, that in and of itself, that little thing is going to start to fuel imagination as you never have before. And, I don't know that people even realize how stuck in patterns we are, but that's a pretty easy one to just do it. If I walk to work instead of taking the subway here in New York, what I see, what I hear, what I experience, I've done it many times, right? All of a sudden I have 10 new ideas for things I want to write or people I should, call or whatever. You start to see everything differently, and then obviously you start to see more as well. And that just feeds and compounds in a good way going forward.
You talk about Larry Page, the founder of Google. When he was at the University of Michigan, he was part of a student leadership training program whose philosophy preached a healthy disregard for the impossible. And he's tried to keep that in Google, which is interesting. You quote him as saying, the hardest thing is to come up with moonshots. We're not teaching people how to identify those difficult projects that we need to get, for Google to succeed, we need to go beyond, just getting better at what we do, but to take great leaps. So give us some advice for getting our minds, loosening. I guess you have to kind of loosen up, right? It's like an athletic event.
Absolutely. No, it's just like training for an athletic event. You have to strengthen the muscles that you want to use. So you have to strengthen your imagination muscle, if you will, by using it, right? And allowing yourself to use it. And not trying to develop a very specific idea, right? Problem solving, trying to solve the refugee crisis, which is something I worked on a lot, something that Google has been very much committed to, right? You will absolutely have to activate your imagination for that purpose. But even just saying, our goal is no people forced to flee, right? That's going to narrow your focus mm-hmm. to a certain extent. It's going to put some guardrails on your use of imagination, right? So you have to think of imagination just for its total unstructured, unbridled power. One of the interesting ways to do that is to go back and sort of counter-program your memory, right, to what I would call rewriting history. So, we all know the story of how, World War I started with the assassination of the Archduke, right? And we all know how all sorts of things emerged from that moment. And, not just the war, but the development of weapons and the development of economies and the reshaping of nation states and, et cetera, right? History is built on top of history, right? Well, go back and rewrite it, right? Imagine what would happen if the Archduke had not been assassinated, right? What would have been the challenges that you know, we faced individually and collectively at those times. That's in a lot of ways what, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I wrote about in the book, did with Hamilton, right? What if you took the story of Alexander Hamilton and you made it a story about immigrants and overcoming adversity and, you know, celebrating diversity, right? None of which were true at the time of Alexander Hamilton, right? How does that change everybody's perception of history in the past and obviously our view of the world today? It changes it dramatically. So, you know, you can rewrite history, and by going through this sort of systematic set of changes and considering all the different crazy possible outcomes, you'll unlock that imagination, right? But that is an easier sort of path for people to take often than just kind of going into the forest and waiting to see what happens, right? You can sort of urge yourself through it by just rewriting history.
Yeah, it's a little easier having a starting point, because just if you just say imagine anything, you know, that's a little harder for people. But if you start with and I think history is a really good example, because there's an example of something where we're taught that it was this way, and you really kind of come to the conclusion this is what happened, when in fact it's completely made up. It was just – it's one interpretation of a hodgepodge of events that could be complete. There could be a completely different interpretation. And Lin-Manuel Miranda's interpretation of the revolutionary founding fathers is great, true or not, because it stimulates your thinking about, you know, how – did it have to be the way that we're – you know, was it the myth that we're taught, or could it have been something different?
Well, and not just there, but, you know, remember the story, right? So he read Ron Chernow's book.
Right.
So Ron had shaped the story in a certain way. And when Lin-Manuel Miranda read it, he saw something, heard something completely different.
Right. Right?
Everybody, including Ron Chernow, said the idea of creating a hip-hop musical about Alexander Hamilton was, you know, crazy, ridiculous. Don't do it, right? But he just... You know, Lin-Manuel Miranda said,
God,
you know, forget
him.
That. Like, yeah. I have it in my head. I'm going to push it out. I'm going to figure it out and go and go and go. And so now not only did he produce something that was born of this extraordinary imagination, right, and continues to evolve. Every night, you know, there are tweaks to the show and there are, you know, things that they do. But there's a whole generation of people, right, who didn't understand that, you know, that musicals didn't have to be just, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber, you know, type creations, right? They didn't realize that, you know, you could have a cast that was all, you know, people who had never starred in Broadway shows before or whatever, right? Every single norm that we have become accustomed to in and around Broadway and things like that was challenged by that one show. And so the use of the imagination that Lin-Manuel Miranda put into play, right, we won't even realize all the effects of that for a long, long, long time. And that's really, I would say, kind of one of the big core arguments of the book is, you know, imagination is great and it's a lot of fun. And yes, a lot of the ideas that people conceive of, you know, will die on the vine or we can't even begin to figure out where to start to pursue that idea, right? The problem with the imagination gap is not so much today. It's 20 years and 30 years and 50 years from now. And, you know, so we haven't made big leaps. We haven't committed to big leaps really in decades, right? President Kennedy wanted us to go to the moon. And, you know, we've seen 30, 40 years of, you know, space travel. Now we barely fund NASA, right? Now we're trying to see if the private spacecraft people can, you know, do it for a reasonable price, not what is out there in the farthest reaches of the universe. The new planets we discovered, you know, that research has been feeding in through satellites for decades, right? When was the last time we launched something with the sole purpose of just exploring and just, you know, imagining what could possibly be out there? We're so obsessed with innovation and execution and you know, I hate to think what the world's going to be like in 30 years, you know, if we haven't really pushed the boundaries of imagination, you know, in any significant way.
Well, that's an important point. Imagination is a continuous process. You can't, imagine something and then coast. You need to keep doing it. I mean, certainly Lin-Manuel Miranda might have reinvented Broadway, and now we're going to reap the fruits of that for 20 years. But then somebody else has to come along and reinvent. Continually, we need to reinvent because it's got to be a continuous process. Right, you interview Sarah Stiles, who's an actress on Broadway, and she says her work is 80-90% imagination. I think that's true of actors. It's true of artists. You also talk to photographers and other artists. Should we look to our artists for the source of imagination? It seems like that's what the arts are all about.
Well, I think the arts by design essentially don't exist until you create them. So there is something open and inherently imaginative about the arts. So look, there's a lot of debate right now about the cutting of the National Endowment for the Arts and things like that. Even that is, you know, sort of the business of the arts, right? It's the functional, you know, how much are we getting for the money that we're investing? The more important thing to think of is, yeah, we have to challenge people to use their imagination. And I'll tell you, Sarah Stiles, in the interest of full transparency, she was actually a babysitter for us.
Oh, that's neat.
She's a Broadway-trained actress. She ended up getting nominated for a Tony Award. But the reason I connected the dots was because I would watch and listen to her interacting with my kids, right? And a lot of babysitters and a lot of parents, I'm guilty of this at times, as I said before, you know, go in and, you know, can we just play the game that we know how to play? Can we, you know, let's build something out of Legos? No, more specifically, let's build a house out of Legos, right? Not whatever you want to build, et cetera. And Sarah wasn't like that, right? Sarah came in and she took the cue that my six and a half year old came up with, and she ran with it.
Nice.
Right, and they're putting on shows, and they're
nice.
You know, running a stuffed animal hospital and all this. And and I was like, you know, Sarah's truly special, right? But when I started to ask her, you know, what it really was is she works extraordinarily hard at trying to find the space that only she can create. Right, she draws from her experiences, she draws from her research, she draws from the script, but ultimately that only got her so far. And so she's trained to feel confident and go with it. And of course it's exhausting, and if you've ever been a, you know, professional actor, you might spend your entire adult life not making it, right? But even if you don't get the big show or win the Tony, she was nominated but didn't win, right? She is constantly learning and challenging and all that. So yeah, the arts, again, we have to be careful not to make the arts into this prescriptive path, right? Painters and playwrights and musicians and things like that. We have to think of the arts as this professional excuse.
Yes.
To conceive of new things and to go individually beyond the place, you know, that we've experienced, right? Sarah's never lived in Texas, yet played this teenage girl in this, you know, small religious town in Texas. She didn't go down there and go method and, you know, try to hang with the teenagers at the Bible study group in Texas, right? She came up with her own version of it. And then I saw that, and my wife saw that, and thousands of people saw that, right? And they walk away with their own triggers for their imagination. So, yeah, you know, the arts, I write in the book that I hope the book sort of is a permission slip for people to use their imagination. I think arts and culture fall into that, right? It's I don't have to like it. I don't have to agree. I don't have to buy that song, right? That's the business of arts. But if I listen to music, there's no doubt that it will trigger things in my imagination that wouldn't be triggered if I didn't hear that music. And that's why we need arts, because we don't know what will happen next. But we have to give ourselves the chance to go there.
But our great artists really are, you know, geniuses of imagination. I think of Pablo Picasso looking at a bicycle seat and handlebars and reimagining it as a bull. And when we look at that, we get this joy because of the imagination we see coming from
his mind.
Or Christo.
Right? Christo
putting curtains across the Grand Canyon, you know? I mean,
right. Walking through the gates, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you see Central Park, New York City.
In a new
way.
You
see fabric in totally different ways.
Yep.
Every single interaction that you have going forward is, you know, forever forever changed, and not in a deliberate way, right? He didn't say you have to experience the gates this way. Picasso didn't say, you know, this is a four-year-old bull with, you know, you know, has sired this and, you know, likes to fight in a ring or whatever. He just said, I see this differently. And, you know,
so surrounding yourself with imagination is one. I mean, look, it'd be great. And you say you should devote an hour a day, you know, to learning so you can imagine, so you can create. But also surrounding yourself with imaginative people is a very important thing. Let's talk about that a little bit when we come back. Our guest, Brian Rich, I'm sorry, I'll do it every time. I did it last time, too. Brian Rich is the author of a brand new book. See, I have a lot of imagination on how to pronounce your name. It's called The Imagination Gap. It's working. Stop thinking the way you should and start making extraordinary things happen. You know what's great about the book is it's so filled with examples and ideas that in itself it is a great spark to the imagination. You read it and you go, oh yeah. And I think in this conversation you can even see that. It's really great, Brian. I'm glad we could get you back on Triangulation. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You know, this is an example of imagination. Here you are, one of the best mortgage lenders in the country. I think $92 billion in loans last year. Really, number one or number two in the number of loans written. Certainly number one in customer satisfaction year after year. You probably could just coast, but no. Quicken Loans said, we want to do something different. We want to do something for the geeks in our audience, people like you. And they created Rocket Mortgage, an entirely online mortgage approval process. I'm sure they were told, you can't do that. How are you going to get, you got to get guy come in and bring his box of paperwork. How are you going to get the pay stubs and the bank statements? You can't do that. But they reinvented the mortgage process. And it's not only fast and easy, and certainly we like that, and completely online, but it also, it's friction-free and more powerful for you. You get to choose the rate and length of your loan in real time. You know, change it and see what happens so you can find a mortgage solution that's right for you. You submit any of the paperwork they need. It's not paper. You submit it electronically, their pay stubs, your check statements, all of that with a touch of a button on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer. You could even do it at an open house. And the best part is you will get approved in minutes for a refinance or a new home loan. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. Here's a great example of how imagination can reinvent the mortgage approval process. It's at quickenloans.com/triangulation. quickenloans.com/triangulation. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Check it out. Rocket Mortgage, quickenloans.com/triangulation. We're talking about imagination with Brian Rich, the author of The Imagination Gap. I'm not sure I completely accept your premise that we're in trouble. I mean, it feels like this is kind of always the way it is, that people imagine things and then they get created and then we get in trenches and, you know, and ruts and we, you know. But that new, you just quoted some people who are doing great imaginative work. I mean, there's imagination all around us. How do we surround ourselves with those people? That's what I want.
Well, I think, the more people who are using their imagination, the more you will be able to do it. So that goes through business. It goes through school, right? The people who are best at encouraging imagination often are teachers, right? Particularly teachers, you know, kindergarten, first grade. These people whose job it is to encourage imagination. But
you say in the book that 4-year-olds ask on average 300 questions a day. 300, that we don't do that anymore. Let's keep that going.
Absolutely. No, and look, one of the suggestions that I make is to be surprised, right? So, you know, and look, I'm guilty of this. So every meeting I go to, every time I'm going to meet someone, you know, I Google them first, right? I want to see what they're all about. I want to be prepared, et cetera, right? So, you know, I'm going to steer the conversation towards what I know they're interested in. Well, what if they sit down and completely surprise me, right? I need to feel comfortable with that because that's going to challenge me. That's going to spark my imagination in different ways too. So the reason I think we're in trouble is because we're putting so much emphasis on algorithms and machine learning and this idea of knowing everything and being able to access everything that we know so quickly. And we see it play out in some dangerous ways. So, you know, we see it play out in politics and how, you know, people are surrounded by the, you know, the messages that make them feel comfortable and the people who share their views. And as a result, you know, we've lost touch and we've lost understanding with, you know, even people a few states away from us. Right. That's a big deal. We should be out there exploring. We're going on a family trip this summer to national parks.
Nice.
And, you know, part of it terrifies me, right? Because you can't go away for weeks when you work for yourself and, you know, my God, what if the client calls and what if somebody needs something?
Tell me about
it. What if I can't say yes, et cetera, right? But that then even just looking at the map, right? And I'm a photographer and I start thinking, you know, God, what lens should I take? And,
right.
You know, where do I want to stand when we're in front of that geyser? And, you know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, hours have passed and I'm just dreaming up all sorts of crazy things that frankly, when I get back to, you know, focusing on work or focusing on my kids again or whatever it is, right? I'm that much better for it. So, you know, yes, the more people who have an imagination and the more we surround ourselves with them, fantastic.
That's an argument for diversity, by the way. And you mentioned this in the book, that companies that are monocultures, just a bunch of white guys, are not going to have the opportunities for imagination. They're going to limit their scope.
And remember that, you know, Google is famous for coming up with sort of the perfect test for how to find someone who fills a particular position, right? We want the engineer who's going to do X, Y, and Z and mesh well with people and who likes this. You know, we use dating sites. You know, let's match people up who have a like of strawberries or, you know, whatever obscure individual piece that we can pull a piece of data on and do it, right? Well, the serendipity is often one of the most powerful tools, right? Google should be going out and hiring people who are, you know, unqualified by the sort of business standards that they have set and integrating that diversity, right? We're in public schools here in New York City and you know, we have been to some great schools and I ended up going mostly to private schools as a kid. I got a great education and I have great friends and I learned a lot and all of that, right? But the daily interaction that people in a diverse environment, whether it's school or work or cities or whatever, have fuels extraordinary potential. And you see it. It's in the book, but you know, the greatest inventions historically have come out of you know, urban settings. Not because they're urban or because there's more, you know, electricity or whatever, but because there's greater diversity, and greater diversity creates more opportunities for you to break your patterns and to learn more. So, you know, I'm not saying we all need to live in cities, but we absolutely need to get out of our patterns and get out of our bubbles. And not with a prescriptive goal in mind. We can't say I'm going to go to a flyover state so I can learn what it's like to be not someone who lives in New York City, right? That's not going to do anything. I have to just, you know, continue to have an opportunity to travel and drive places instead of just going to the airport and who knows, right, where you find yourself and what you experience and who you meet. But the one thing that we do know is that it will absolutely trigger imagination. And, you know, that's where the cure for cancer might come from, or that's where, you know, the next, you know, extraordinary evolution in our society, you know, begins is a random serendipitous meeting, you know, between people, you know, in a place that neither ever expected to be. Crazy as that sounds.
Speaking of crazy, you do talk in the book about having too much imagination, and that sometimes OCD or schizophrenia, there's a, you know, you can have a break with the reality. You can be too imaginative. Do we have to worry about that?
You know, I think we certainly have to worry about stigmatizing imagination and assuming that anybody
like
who that. Is
yeah.
Who is
it's crazy, right?
You know, not following the path
right.
is crazy,
right.
And you know, frankly, that is one of the most dangerous things that I see with, you know, young children and school, right? Is, you know, kids don't know what these things mean, but they hear it they repeat it, and you know, you might have the next Einstein or the next, you know, whoever in your elementary school, but if you start calling that kid crazy because he or she likes to draw instead of play at recess or whatever the reasons, right? the whole trajectory of that child's life and, you know, is going to change. So we have to be very careful, you know, to recognize the difference. Yes, there are sicknesses, illness, you know, brain, you know, issues that people have that are very similar to the triggers that feed imagination. But, you know, again, we stigmatize mental illness as if it's a problem.
Yeah.
Mental illness is not a problem. It's just something that, you know, exists in people. And arguably we all have some, right? Maybe it's, for all I know, it's the opposite, right? The people who are stigmatized as being, you know, deranged are actually the people who are fully realizing sort of their imagination. And the rest of us are the ones, you know, who really need treatment.
That.
It's that kind of construct that we've set up in our society
that
puts us on a path that, you know, I'm just afraid we're gonna accelerate down that path and look up 20 years, 50 years, 100 years from now as a society and go, you know, what did we miss? Like, what did we not even try? And now what can't we get out of as a result? That's where the danger comes in, and that's why this is not a 12-step program. Imagination is the greatest natural resource that we all have available to us, and the more that we use it, the more things will change. There will be some bad, but I would think on balance, you know, the upside of using our imagination far outstrips the potential for using it in the wrong ways.
And the good news is we all have access to it. It's there. It's built in. We were born with it. It's just a question of celebrating it, wanting to have it, and then doing the simple things to kick yourself in the head and get those rusty old imagination gears turning.
Yeah, our brain is more powerful than any computer. And I know that people say, you know, in 2029, computers will be able to think just like the human brain. It's no, right? We built the computer. Our ability to adapt, our ability to use our imagination, it's a uniquely human trait. So computers will always help us to get faster. It will help us to process options more readily. It'll certainly allow us to access, you know, information and experiences from the other side of the planet that we wouldn't be able to, and all that will serve to feed our imagination. But imagination is this incredible natural resource that has, you know, boundless potential. And you know, once we turn it on, once we turn it up, you know, we'll see what happens on the other side. And I do want to stress, right? Some of it will seem bad, right? Some of the darkest, most terrifying, most awful things that have ever happened in, you know, human existence were the product of someone's imagination. And we, you know, decided that was not how we feel like we should be, you know, functioning, how we should be living. But just, you know, just because people who do dark things with their imagination, if anything, it proves the power of the imagination. Yeah. It proves just how powerful it is that people could conceive of those things. So, you know, let's counter what we think might be dark in the world with using our imagination for things that, you know, are more interesting and more constructive.
It feels like we go through cycles of imagination, and then, oh, that scared us. And then we get very narrow. And I think maybe the 60s were this kind of ferment. A lot of what we've had in the computer and technology revolution came out of that ferment of the 60s. But then we got scared and we shut down a little bit. That seems like that comes in waves, doesn't it?
It does, and I think we are entering that next wave. My fear is that there are fewer people who feel as if the sort of unbounded power of imagination is available to them or should be pursued. So, yes, we have a lot of people working on virtual realities and AI, et cetera, but so much of it is focused on things like machine learning, right? And how can we do more faster,
right,
instead of people who are looking at – and there's some of this in the book. I talked with a futurist about this, you know, who sort of says, what does it look like not when robots replace humans or replace human functions, but what happens when, you know, technology creates a scenario where humans are living at their maximum potential, right? Arguably, we have barely scratched the surface of what our brain and what human beings are capable of. And the really cool potential of something like artificial intelligence is we get to strip away a lot of the things that human beings can't sort of stop worrying about, can't you know, exhaust themselves thinking about. And there are stupid examples, right? Everyone makes fun of Mark Zuckerberg for wearing, you know, the same outfit every day. But he has made the argument, as did President Obama, as have many people, that, you know, the amount of energy that he expends picking out his clothes could be better spent elsewhere. Apple redesigned its whole new infinite loop, right? So I don't know if you saw the story, so that the engineers, there are no lips on the doors. It's one continuous flat surface, because the amount of energy that your brain needs to like look and see the thing and step over it and all of that, if you apply that in some other way, right, that has massive, massive opportunity associated with it.
Wow.
So think of technology in the future not as a replacement of the things that we've become accustomed to, but as, you know, another asset that would unlock the potential of our imagination and the power of our brain. When you think about it that way, right, it becomes much less scary, right? People resisting robot overlords and the fear that robots are going to do whatever robots are going to do, and start to say, well, okay, if I had unlimited capacity, unlimited potential, unlimited time to do the things that you know, my instincts, my imagination tell me I should be doing, what would life be like then, right? Now we're into this conversation. Now the gap is starting to close and the imagination is off and running, and every single one of us can get there if we allow it. And my fear is we're at one of those inflection points, and, you know, we're more capable of masking big imaginative change as incremental innovative progress than we've ever been before, and that's where the danger lies.
When we talked last, Brian Rich, you were about your book, Shift and Reset. I think you said you were working on a book about the imagination. I'm glad it's here. And it's full of great inspiration. And it's not available yet. It comes out Wednesday.
The ebook version is there. But get it. And, you know, I know the publisher's eager to ship it. So by all means, line up and
buy.
Hey, if anyone, you know, wants to have a conversation, you know, seek me out. We'll have it. If anyone wants to, you know, buy in bulk and have me come and, you know, help you use your imagination, I'm here for you. I got you.
It's a great area. It's an exciting area to be working in. I'm really glad we could talk to you. Brian Rich, author of The Imagination Gap: Stop Thinking the Way You Should and Start Making Extraordinary Things Happen. Hits the bookstore shelves on Wednesday. You can get the ebook now. And, of course, you can go to the website, theimaginationgap.com, for more information. Thank you, Brian. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
My pleasure. We do triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC, because we're on summertime here in the States, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live and be the third leg of the stool, the third side of the triangle, you can be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. We love having you. But if you can't do all of that, well, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is also always available at our website, twit.tv/TRI. And wherever you get your podcasts, you do want to subscribe to this one. You don't want to miss an episode. We'll see you next. We've got a great one planned for you next week on triangulation. See you then.